Preface, read by Peter Singer, the author and a professor of bioethics with a background in philosophy.
When he saw the man fall onto the subway tracks, Wesley Autry didn't hesitate. With the lights of the oncoming train visible, Autry, a construction worker, jumped down to the tracks and pushed the man down into a drainage trench between the rails, covering him with his own body. The train passed over them, leaving a trail of grease on Autry's cap. Autry, later invited to the State of the Union address and praised by the US president for his bravery, downplayed his actions. "I don't feel like I did something spectacular. I just saw someone who needed help. I did what I felt was right." What if I told you that you too can save a life? Even many lives. Do you have a bottle of water or a can of soda on the table beside you as you read this book? If you're paying for something to drink when safe drinking water comes out of the tap, you have money to spend on things you don't really need. Around the world, over 700 million people struggle to live each day on less than you paid for that drink. Because they can't afford even the most basic health care for their families, their children may die from simple, easily treatable diseases like diarrhea. You can help them, and you don't have to risk getting hit by an oncoming train to do it. I have been thinking and writing for more than 40 years about how we should respond to hunger and poverty. I've presented this book's argument to thousands of students in my university classes and in my online course on effective giving, and to countless others in newspapers, magazines, a TED Talk, podcasts, and television programs. As a result, I've been forced to respond to a wide range of thoughtful challenges. The first edition of this book brought more discussion and challenges, and the rise of the effective altruism movement has stimulated extensive research into what forms of assistance provide the best value for money. So now this fully updated 10th anniversary edition distills everything I've learned over the years about why we give or don't give and what we should do about it. We live in a unique moment. The proportion of people unable to meet their basic physical needs is smaller today than it has been at any time in recent history, and perhaps at any time since humans first came into existence. At the same time, when we take a long-term perspective that looks beyond the fluctuations of the economic cycle, the proportion of people with far more than they need is also unprecedented. Most importantly, rich and poor are now linked in ways they never were before. Moving images in real time of people on the edge of survival are beamed onto our mobile devices. Not only do we know a lot about the desperately poor, but we also have much more to offer them in terms of better healthcare, improved seeds and agricultural techniques, and new technologies for generating electricity. More amazingly, through instant communications and open access to a wealth of information that surpasses the greatest libraries of the pre-internet age, we can enable them to join the worldwide community, if only we can help them get far enough out of poverty to seize this opportunity. The United Nations and its member states have set an ambitious target: to end extreme poverty by 2030. Ending extreme poverty in just 11 more years is going to be a challenge, but we have made good progress toward that goal. In 1960, according to UNICEF, the United Nations International Children's Emergency Fund, 20 million children died before their fifth birthday. When this book first appeared, in 2009, I used the most recent figure available to me to give readers the good news that the toll had dropped to 9.7 million. Now, in this 10th anniversary edition, the most recent report estimates that 5.4 million children under the age of 5 died in 2017. That is 11,780 fewer children, or the equivalent of 21 full Airbus 380s, dying every day in 2017 than the number I used in the first edition, and 40,000 fewer children dying each day than in 1960. Public health campaigns against smallpox, measles, and malaria have contributed to the drop in child mortality, as has economic progress in several countries. The drop is even more impressive because the world's population has more than doubled since 1960. Yet we can't become complacent, 5.4 million children under five dying every year, with over half of those deaths due to conditions that could be prevented or treated with access to simple, affordable interventions, is an immense tragedy, not to mention a moral stain on a world as rich as ours. We can liken our situation to an attempt to reach the summit of an immense mountain. For all the aeons of human existence, we've been climbing up through dense cloud. We haven't known how far we have to go, nor whether it is even possible to get to the top. Now at last we have emerged from the mist and can see a route up the remaining steep slopes and onto the summit ridge. The peak still lies some distance ahead. There are sections of the route that will challenge our abilities to the utmost, but we can see that the ascent is feasible. We can, each of us, do our part in this epoch-making climb. In recent years, there's been a good deal of coverage about some who have taken on this challenge in a bold and public way. Warren Buffett has pledged to give away 99% of his wealth to philanthropy during his lifetime, or at death. Since 2006, he has donated more than $30.9 billion, while Bill and Melinda Gates have given approximately $50 billion and are planning to give more. For both Buffett and the Gateses, reducing extreme poverty is a top priority. Immense as these sums are, we will see by the end of this book that they are only a small fraction of what people in rich nations could easily give without a significant reduction in their standard of living. We won't reach our goal unless many more contribute to the effort. That's why this is the right time to ask yourself, what ought I be doing to help? I write this book with two linked but significantly different goals. The first is to challenge you to think about our obligations to those trapped in extreme poverty. The part of the book that lays out this challenge will deliberately present a very demanding, some might even say impossible, standard of ethical behaviour. I'll suggest that it may not be possible to consider ourselves to be living a morally good life unless we give a great deal more than most of us would think is realistic to expect human beings to give. This may sound absurd, and yet the argument for it is remarkably simple. It goes back to that bottle of water, to the money you spend on things that aren't really necessary. If it is so easy to help people who are in desperate need, through no fault of their own, and yet we fail to do so, aren't we doing something wrong? At a minimum, I hope this book will persuade you that there is something deeply askew with our widely accepted views about what it is to live a good life. The second goal of this book is to convince you to choose to give more of your income to help the poor. You'll be happy to know that I fully realize the need to step back from the demanding standards of a philosophical argument to ask what will really change the way we act. I'll consider the reasons, some relatively convincing, others less so, that we offer for not giving, as well as the psychological factors that get in the way of our doing what we know we ought to do. I'll acknowledge the bounds of human nature and yet provide examples of people who seem to have found a way to push those bounds farther than most. And I will close with suggestions for giving that, far from demanding great sacrifices, will leave most people feeling happier and more fulfilled than ever before. Despite this, for reasons that I'll explore in this book, many of us find it difficult to give money to help people we've never met, living in distant countries we've never visited. I'm hoping that you will look at the larger picture and think about what it takes to live ethically in a world in which 266,000 children die each year from malaria, a disease both preventable and curable. 1 million women suffer from obstetric fistula, a devastating but curable childbirth injury, rendering the woman incontinent. And for 4 out of 5 people living with blindness, aid could have, at very low cost, prevented the condition causing them to be blind or restored their sight by means of inexpensive cataract surgery. Think about someone you love, and then ask yourself how much you would give to prevent that person from dying of malaria, or to enable that person to be treated for a childbirth injury that made her a social outcast, or to have their sight restored if they should become blind. Then ask yourself how much you are doing to help people living in poverty who lack the means to do just those things for themselves and their families. I believe that if you read this book to the end and look honestly and carefully at our situation, assessing both the facts and the ethical arguments, you will agree that we must act. There are links in the last chapters that will show you how to do so. All dollar figures given in this book are US dollars unless otherwise stated.